Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, Moto America fans, and welcome to this video, special video edition of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. I am obviously Bice. There's no issue about us being confused because there's our communications manager on the other side of the area here, Mr. Paul Carruthers. And we are joined by a Moto2 star and a former Moto America star who is back being a Moto America star. And it's Cameron Beaubier and Ezra Beaubier. And obviously, they're brothers. You can obviously tell they're related by, they look like twins,
in
fact.
I'm a little shorter, but.
But we're delighted to have these guys on. It's great to get them together. And Ezra put out his press release recently. He's with the Motorsport Exotica BS Orange Cat Blood, Sweat, Tears Vodka Racing Team. Perhaps the longest name in the history of motorcycle
it
racing.
Is. I looked.
It is, yeah, it's definitely the longest. When Cameron used to have, it was Yamaha, Extended Service, yep. Graves, Yamaha, all kinds of stuff. So that was a long one too, but we're used to that. So welcome, guys. I guess, Ezra, we'll get started with you. So big news to hear that you're back with us again, and it's been a few years. Last time you were racing with us, it was Superstock 600?
Yep.
Okay.
Supersport 600.
Supersport, yep. And you raced in Junior Cup, and the bikes were always a little...
Small for me.
But you weren't as tall then. You were tall, but not as tall as you are now.
Yeah, I was about 6 foot then, and I'm about 6'3 now, so still grown a little bit.
But, and we have a fair number of over six foot riders. I mean, Jake Lewis, Corey Alexander. They seem to go well on the big bikes, and now you're on a BMW M1000RR. How does it fit you?
It fits me great. I mean, we built the seat up a little bit, and it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, he still makes it look small, but...
He does.
It's like a monkey on a football.
You built the seat up?
Yeah, like thicken up the seat.
To make you taller?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, to get your legs farther away.
Yeah, because otherwise...
I was going to say, if you took it down, you could give him the pad that you don't use.
Pegs G'd out as low as they'll go, as far back as they'll go. So.
Yeah, Nolan Lampkin has a setup similar to that. When he was on an R6, he had risers under the seat on it to get himself up a little bit higher. And we've talked to Jake Lewis about his setup, too. So when you have the pegs back far but kind of low, do they touch?
No.
You know, so that's not the first thing that goes, you know,
no.
If you go down.
I mean, I've drug pegs in the past, but I haven't touched, I don't even drag my toes or nothing on the BMW. It's solid. Fits me great.
That's good. And this is a team, at least the Motorsport Exotica part of it. You've been involved with them for the past couple of years. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I... We raced on the West Coast last year with Motorsport Exotica on a Cowie. And then this year, we moved to the BMW S1000. And our plan was to race on the West Coast and then just do Laguna. And in the beginning of February, everything came together for us to run our Moto America program. And so we sold our S1000 and got upgraded to the M1000. And... been a full team effort to get this thing together, and we're here, and it's happening. It's pretty crazy. So,
have you ridden this bike at all yet?
Yeah, I raced it once at the first AFM round back at Button Willow, and it poured rain Saturday night, so the track wasn't too great on Sunday, but it was good. I really like it, and the wings are a trip, honestly, because never ridden with wings ever, and it pulls a lot of downforce with the wheelies and everything, but it threw me off with the wind. Like, it was kind of windy on Sunday, and it was blowing me around everywhere. Like, it was, you don't want the wings when it's windy, but when the weather's good, obviously, the wings are a huge help.
So let's talk to Cameron a little bit. Cameron, you're back in the U.S. You were kind of close to being in the U.S. last weekend. Back-to-back, do you like to do a back-to-back rounds?
Yeah, I do, just staying on the bike, and it's strange doing back-to-back rounds on different continents, that's for sure, but no, it's cool. I'm so pumped to be back here in Austin and Coda. It's a special weekend for our family, and we got some friends coming out too, having, you know, Ezra race and myself, so yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
You know, one thing I've never understood, Cameron, is, and this was the case when you raced in Moto America, you know, Laguna Seca was one of your favorite tracks, and it's kind of a home track for you. But you didn't really race there any more than anybody else did. And Circuit of the Americas, I mean, I know that you've raced here in Moto America, and you've raced last year. You've got fifth here. But you still don't race much more than anybody else. But what is it about being home? Is there some kind of motivation that you can't even describe?
Yeah, I mean, it is just a different, it's a different feeling, like coming into the race. I mean, you could ask Shelby. I've been more on edge, or like just a little bit more nervous. And I used to get like that, you know, going to Sonoma or going to Laguna, like our home rounds, you know, just because for whatever reason, you're close to home, you want to do good in front of your family and your friends, stuff like that, even though it doesn't really matter. But you just put a little more pressure on yourself, I guess. And it definitely gives you that extra little push, I feel like, especially coming back here, last year, I knew that it was kind of like not necessarily make or break time, but I knew that track knowledge wasn't an issue. I've been around the track, you know, and yeah, and I knew that was the weekend that, like, I had no excuses, basically. So luckily it worked out. We got a good solid top five, and ended up, I feel like that just gave me like a little recharge going into the rest of the season, because I realized that I can run up front with those guys and stuff like that when the playing field's equal, I guess you could say, you know, in terms of track knowledge and stuff like that. So that definitely gave me a little jump. And then we went and had a pretty good round at Portugal at the end of the year, and didn't have the best end of the year at Valencia, you know, with had a little, you know, a little bike problem, and I was, you know, struggled a little bit in practice and stuff like that. But I felt like we ended the year a lot better than that, like, mid-season slump I got in.
Right.
Now, the nervousness and the extra pressure, I mean, you've, like you just said, with Laguna Seca and Sonoma, but it's always worked. You've always made that work, right? I mean, it's
most
always
of the
a
time,
positive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe we all need to go to Europe.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Sean and I.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I give you advice on the phone all the time, even though I have no right to, because I don't know what the frick I'm doing either. But, like, I tell you, like, you have to qualify on the front two rows, which you know. How important is that here? I mean, you did it last year, and you led into the first corner. I mean, if you could get on the front row, you could lead into the first corner and maybe not overshoot it and actually, like...
Yeah, no,
right?
Yeah,
so is
nice.
That... I mean, is qualifying, I don't think that people realize how important it is, because when you qualify, you know, fourth row back, there's a first turn's a nightmare, and then you find yourself 2 seconds behind after one lap.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I feel like people don't understand just how important, yeah, being on those first few rows are, because I mean, we're on the same bike, it's so competitive, it's incredible. There's been times I qualified 24th and I'm not even a second off, you know, I'm less than a second off, and this was last year, and it's, the field is so tight, like you're just trying to find a 10th here, a 10th there, and it's tough, and that makes it, the way the format is too, you have to be top 14 out of practice to go into Q2, and you really, really want to be in the Q2 session without having to go to Q1, being outside the top 14, because Q1, I mean, sometimes, especially like when we're right after the MotoGP qualifying or practices, there's a lot of good rubber laid down, and there's just like that extra little bit of grip. And sometimes Q1 goes faster than you, like, or they go just about as fast as the top five do in Q2, which is, it's pretty tough once you get in Q1 to make it into Q2 is what I'm saying. So every practice pretty much turns into a qualifying after FP1. You get FP1, basically 40 minutes to, especially on a new track, to learn the track, figure out how your bike's working, if you need to change gearing, all that stuff. And then basically FP2, FP3 is a qualifying to get into qualifying. So definitely makes it tough. But I feel like other than last weekend, we were able to salvage it in last weekend going through Q1 to Q2, but the first two rounds, like, it was pretty solid. I've been I've been more around the top 10 consistently in all the practices and stuff like that, a lot more regularly than last year. Last year I'd be 26th on Friday and then slowly chipping away and getting there and like arrive up to speed mostly at most of the tracks by Sunday, but I'd be going crazy in the race and sometimes I'd crash, sometimes it'd work out and I'd get like a top 10. And I feel like this year has been a little bit different, even though like the, I guess like on paper, the results haven't looked a ton different, you know, at the beginning of the year, they've just been right around the top 10. But I feel like I'm close to that like next step. And once I make that next step just into like the top five, like regularly, I think that'll be, man, that'll feel good.
Now, free practice one, it doesn't seem like you're, it takes you a while to get going, and not even at tracks, even at tracks that you've been to, it takes you a little bit to get going. Don't you think it'd be like, it'd be really cool if you could be first in FP1 here? Because I think that makes a freaking statement, like, you guys might as well pack your shit. Right? But if you're 12th in free practice one, yeah, they're like, oh, fuck, whatever, yeah, it's Cameron. It doesn't matter if he's home. So why don't you go ahead and do that?
All right, I'll, yeah.
No,
I'll
work you should on be it. The first three after FP1. Or don't come back in.
Okay.
All right. Just go out the gate.
Brutal. Okay. I'll just go home.
So seriously, though, that would be, you could make a statement with that.
Yeah.
Is it hard for you just to get up to speed? I think you were kind of like that in Moto America Superbike. You never, like, set the world on fire right away.
The thing with this class is we all have one bike. If you go out and do something stupid and crash in the first 10 minutes of your practice, you're missing almost the rest of the 40 minutes or right. The rest of the 30 minutes. So for me, because I've made that mistake a couple times last year, and it – you feel stupid for one, and it doesn't help you for two. So for me, it works better if I just like kind of roll into it and get up to speed a little, maybe a little slower. But I feel like after going to these tracks, after knowing these tracks a little bit better, obviously here I've raced here a handful of times. Hopefully it's a little different this weekend.
And Sean alluded to it, I think, right away, but like, this hasn't been like one of your tracks. I mean, it's
right.
Just,
yeah, it's funny because I've done like a handful of interviews going into this track last year and this year, and they're like, oh yeah, what is it about this place? Like, you like, do you love this place? And I was like, I mean, not really, you know. Like, the tracks are like, the track is cool. It's a very technical track and it's pretty tough to learn. But I've always kind of struggled here, you know, on super bikes. I mean, Tony just, yeah, he beat me a lot here. Roger, this hasn't been one of my best tracks on the Moto America calendar. But I guess now it, you know, it kind of is, you know, it's just racing back in America and in front of everyone. It just, especially just being away from home. All you guys know, I'm a homebody. I don't like, once I'm home, and I don't like, you know, traveling or nothing like that. So
we need to get Sonoma homologated.
Yeah,
that's right.
So I forgot what I was going to say, but I'll remember here in a minute. But go ahead, Sean.
Well, so I want to ask you about this track. So obviously last year there was a lot of talk about it being bumpy. Oh, go ahead.
Last year was bumpy. I was going to ask
why
that.
Did you interrupt?
I know. I wanted to interrupt him because he talks too much anyway. But like, last year was bumpy and this year the bumps are gone. Did it help you that you knew where the bumps were or not? Because that's, you know, like at Laguna Seca, it's like everybody, the Americans always knew every little bump. And it
yeah,
helped.
Well, it's funny you say that because I don't know if the track got bumpier last year compared to previous years we were here, or it's just like the chassis we're on, because they're so much more stiff and yeah, rigid. You feel everything, and I could not believe like how rough it was last year. So I think it's pretty awesome that Coda, you know, put everything together to get the place repaved. And NASCAR is here a couple weeks ago, and supposedly it's a lot better.
They said it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could go around in your rental car and think it's a lot better.
Yeah, but dude, to be honest, like, to be able to race in the States and stuff and MotoGP, I'd race anywhere. Like, I don't care. Like, I'd be happy with it no matter what.
Go ahead, Sean.
Laguna would be pretty cool, though, if they got Laguna.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, one of the things that I think Paul Carruthers will admit is everybody should have a teammate named Sean, and Cameron has one teammate named Sean Tillman Kelly, who it's Marcos Ramirez was great. You I know you thought a lot of him as well, but what's it like to have Sean on the team now and work with him? I mean, is he soaking up things you're telling him, or do you guys just keep your own game separate, or how do you work?
I'd say we, like, when it comes to the weekend and racing and stuff, we kind of do our own things, but he's awesome. Like, he's it's really cool to have, like, another American over there, and he's super friendly, super cool. It's funny because we've built a good friendship, but I didn't really know him much back here when I raced in the States, you mm-hmm. know? Like, if I saw him, I'd wave at him, he'd say what's up, but I didn't really know him that well. So, yeah, it's been cool to, like, get to know him and joke around and just, yeah, you know, travel the world with, like, another American, and it's really cool. And I feel like for him, it's been a really good transition getting back into that paddock, because he raced Rookies Cup for a few years. He knows the tracks. He speaks Spanish, which really, really helps.
Yeah.
And he's only, you know, 19, 20, so he's got a lot of talent, and I think he's got a super bright future. Yeah.
It's funny. Well, I don't know if it was when we had him on the podcast or just talking to Garrett, but Garrett Gerloff we talked to, who's been hanging out with Sean a little bit too, and he said Sean was so excited at the beginning of the year. He could not wait to go, and he was just really all about it. And I'm sure now he's kind of calmed down a little bit. I mean, I know first couple sessions he was doing pretty well there, but now it's kind of like back where you might expect him to be.
It's good for me too, because he brings so much just like energy, like positive energy and excitement, you know. And like at times when I'm struggling, and obviously I went through, you know, last year and definitely had more lows than highs, and it beats you up sometimes but like when he comes in with all this energy, like this positivity, it's good for me, because I'm like, man, like you really think about what you're doing, you know. It's not like, yeah, it's really easy to focus on like the negatives when you're struggling and all that stuff, but then when you actually sit back and like realize what you're doing, like I'm getting paid to race motorcycles and I'm traveling the world, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you definitely gotta change your mindset sometimes, for me. Yeah.
Right. So you've been home for a little bit, and Ezra, I'm going to ask you about this. I see on Facebook a lot, your dad, Jeff, puts some, both your dad, he's your, both, yeah, sorry. I don't mean just your dad. I know. You do kind of look like him, too. But anyway, he posts about Area 97.
Yeah.
And I know moto is pretty important to training. Can you talk about that? And then Cameron, too. I mean, you know, when you come home, obviously you probably go out there, too. But do you spend a lot of time on that track?
Yeah. It's not really moto. It's more of like TT style.
Turn track. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have like a little 150R, and I have a knobby front, like a European street rear tire, and just teaches you throttle control and just how to be perfect and hit your marks every lap, and it's awesome. We love it.
He's on a cheater bike though. Full cheater
well,
bike.
Deserves, and he, like,
and he, I will yell. That's the excuse. Oh, I'm way big. I'm too big. Yeah, but he's on the full cheater bike. It's like the or water-cooled 150, the race 150, and oh my gosh.
You're on a stalker.
Yeah. I don't even like ride, he smokes me.
is that track set up for that style, that size CC of bike? And that,
yeah, that's
it's just
like,
the way to
that's
do it.
Like as big as you want to go. Any bigger, like they used to ride like fully dirt track 450s out there.
Right.
But you have to have the track, like you have to put so much into the track and have it absolutely perfect for it to actually work on a full dirt tracker like that.
It's really hard to keep like the moisture level right, like because it's too wet, and then it'll dry up just like that, you know. Like you have such a short window to ride when it's good. But it's fun, man. Like we go ride motocross together, and we haven't ridden too much dirt track lately, but yeah, been riding some motocross, and even I got out to the go-kart track a couple times on the Ovali, and he's riding a supermoto bike, and it's definitely good to have someone to ride with, and it's been cool, like just for our family, him getting this opportunity and stuff, because obviously he's showed like a lot of speed the last couple of years in AFM, but I mean, it costs a lot of money for one, and for two, it's just hard to get an opportunity to go race on the Moto America level, you know. And so yeah, I think it's super cool what Exotica and he put together, and I'm excited, yeah.
It's funny because, you know, when Cameron was still racing in Moto America and you kind of hadn't been racing for a little bit, and you went through a time period where you were a kid and you would get in trouble. And I would talk to Cameron and I'd feel bad and I'd be like, what did he do now? And he'd go, oh man, that dummy. And I felt so bad for you because I was like, why is he always in trouble, you know? And you're past that. You're a grown-ass man now, so you don't get in trouble anymore, do you?
The trouble's just me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Dumbass teenager.
What do you do, Ezra, aside from racing? I mean, you have a job, obviously, right?
No, I'm racing, full-time racing. Last year and the beginning of this year, I was a pool boy. So I was just cleaning pools, doing that. And then I'd say about a month and a half ago, Jared, who runs Motorsport Exotica, he finally locked everything in about 2 months ago, beginning of February. He was like, hey, man, like, quit your job. We're going racing.
Wow.
We're doing this. And Orange Cat Racing stepped up big time. And same with Blood, Sweat, Tears, Vodka. They both stepped up big time and made this happen for us. So.
You know, it's pretty rare in the paddock. I mean, a lot of guys have these jobs, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's good that you've got that.
Yeah. So the pool boy thing, I want to get back to that. Is it like, depending on what movies you watch, but is it like in the movies or not?
Well, so I was in the wintertime, so everyone was kind of hibernating. It wasn't everything you would think it would be.
It wasn't like hot housewives around the pool all day.
No. I mean, I did some nice houses here and there, but if I were to be down in Southern Cal, that's where the money is.
Yeah, I was looking into it for a while, but not anymore. I've settled into this Moto America thing. I gave up on the pool boy dream. Yeah. How many tracks that on our schedule have you raced at?
Well, I've done VIR, Jersey, Road America, but those were all on the KTM 390.
Right. So, I mean, you know what's left and right, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different from a 390 to a fully built 1000, obviously. So, and I honestly don't even really, in my head, I feel like I've never even ridden those tracks just because it's been that long. And it's a completely different racetrack from a 300 to a fully built 1000. So I'm kind of going into it as if I've never really ridden the tracks. But Motorsport Exotica, they're super, super cool with Superbike, California Superbike School. So I'm going to go do a handful of days at some of the tracks I go race them. So I'll do like 3 or 4 days at VIR, 3 or 4 days at Pittsburgh, couple days at Road America, just so I'll on a stock S1000 BMW, so just so I'll be able to learn the tracks and work with one of their coaches and figure everything out before I have to just go pin it wide open. So it'd be good to learn everything at a slow speed, not just trying to go Mach 10.
And those guys are pretty patient, you think? I mean, they're like, they know the deal.
Yeah. No, I mean, and they know the tracks super well, and they know the lines and everything, so
right.
Won't be like this guy last year, just riding blind straight out of the gates.
Right.
Yeah.
Cameron, so the bike this year, I don't know if there's much difference from last year, but does it feel like it's more your bike than it was last year? You're more used to it? Has things have changed a little maybe?
Yes. Calex came out with a new chassis and swing arm, and it's not a ton different, but what they did was put a little bit more flex in the chassis, and then I think I think they did the same thing with the swing arm. And for me, I just, even the first test back, like after not riding the bike for 2 months or something like that, I felt like I jumped on the thing and it was the most comfortable I'd been on. It's weird. And from the first few laps, like I got on the thing and it felt like my bike, you know, rather than last year. There was a lot of races I'd show up to and I'd ride the thing, the first couple laps, and it just did not feel like my bike, you know. It didn't feel like when I got on my R1, be like, okay, like this is my bike, like this is my seating position, like all that. It just, it felt foreign, you know. So I've gotten that feeling at pretty much every track we've gone to this year so far, and part of it is knowing the track and stuff like that, but I'm talking like as soon as you sit on the bike and you're riding down pit lane, like just the feeling of the bike. I don't know if it's, you know, just a year under my belt on the thing or what, probably a mix of that, but I definitely feel like the small changes they made definitely helped me a little bit. And yeah, I mean, at the start of the year, we tested at Jerez, and it was going really good. The first day was going really good. I've always struggled there. All those guys are really fast there. It's like their backyard track, you know. Mm-hmm. And they've been testing there on Moto 3 bikes and Moto 2 bikes and all that for years and racing there, you know, in CV, all that stuff. So they all know that track really well. And I've always struggled just a little bit there, and I felt like I was finally just like starting to ride the track the way it needed to be ridden, and had a really, really good day. And then I was on my in lap, and I rode over the inside curb in those fast rights, and the front just was gone. And it's a fourth gear corner, like it was fast. It was a really fast crash, and bumped my head a little bit. And the team was just looking out for me, and I probably could have ridden, but they're like, yeah, you don't, like, it's not worth it to go out, you know, and if something happens or something like that, it's not, yeah. So we sat out the next day, which was a bummer because we only had 2 days at Jerez, and it put me on the back foot a little bit going into Portimao, and Portimao is a pretty good track for me, and ended up not going too bad there. I was rode a little tight, you know, the first day, and then the second day I was pretty fast, and then had another little tip over and struggled a little bit the last day. But one thing on this bike compared to, you know, the previous bikes I've ridden is you have to have so much confidence in the front end and the front tire, and there's been so many times that the front tire is like let go, and it's hard to have that much trust into something that like that, you know, doesn't work all the time, yo. So you know, I'm always learning, and I definitely got to work on rebounding from those little crashes, because it's crazy how much these guys crash. They just throw the bike down the road and get right back up and go faster, you know, and that's not really my style. So
yeah, well, you know, one more thing I want to ask you about the Moto 2 bike, just so the fans understand this, is you rode a super bike that had a lot of electronics on it. I mean, traction control, lift control, all kinds of stuff. What controls does a Moto 2 bike have on it? It doesn't have traction control at all?
No. No, okay. No traction control, no wheelie control. You have a little bit of throttle mapping you can mess with, but everyone pretty much runs the same stuff. I mean, the bikes, they only have 140 horsepower, so you don't necessarily really need wheelie control. If there is anything, it would be nice to have a little traction control, just like a little safety barrier, you know? But, yeah, I feel like it really, like, levels the playing field, you know? Like, everyone's working so much more on setup and stuff like that rather than electronics. And, engine brake is a big thing. Like, engine brake is, we mess with engine brake pretty much all weekend because mm-hmm. there's such a fine line, you know, with it. And it's not adjustable like you could do it in Moto America, like corner by corner. It's lap by lap. So if you make a change in second gear, it's going to affect you here, rather than just that one corner. Mm-hmm. So you definitely have to have a good game plan with it.
So it's a compromise.
Yeah.
What you've already said, and we know that the bikes are basically identical. Where does a guy that's first versus a guy that's 10th, where is he making that difference? Is he just closing his eyes?
I'm still trying to find that out.
Because the whole setup thing's just got to be based on traction, right? I mean, that's what you're looking for is the feel of the...
and traction, turning, and it's funny too, because if you go down the pit lane and look at the bikes, there's a lot, like they're the same bikes, or like Calyx, you know, like the majority of people are on Calyx chassis, and it's pretty crazy how different some of the bikes look setup wise. Like some are taller, some are lower, Some have shorter swing arms and all that stuff. And it's so easy as a rider to get wrapped up in that and be like, oh, like if maybe if I had something like that, you know, or if they have run in a different swing arm, oh, maybe if I run that swing arm, like it'll work better for me. Or if my bike's a little taller, maybe that'll work better for me and all that stuff. But you really have to just do your own thing and work with your crew and just focus on yourself. And it's so, like I said, it's just so easy to get out of that bubble and think like that. So,
all right, one last question, and then we got to wrap this up. But so, is the bike, the new bike, close enough to the old bike that you can roll out of the pits here on Friday with the setup from last year's bike?
Yes.
So you'll start with where you ended.
Yes. Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
I can't imagine not being first, second, or third in the first session then. Can you guys?
No pressure.
All right, Sean, you want to wrap
it
up?
Yeah, let me just wrap it up. So I just want to let you guys know, so we from Moto America's point of view, we have two Superbike races this weekend, Medallia Superbike. The one on Saturday is at 5 o'clock. The one on Sunday is 3:45 to 4 o'clock. But the most important thing for you guys to know is it's on FS2 at 10 p.m. Eastern, both races, so Saturday night and also Sunday night. So great way to end your evenings both days by watching Medallia Superbike and seeing this guy, Ezra Beaubier, making his debut in that class. And obviously you'll be able to watch Cameron as well. Also, Live Plus, our live streaming subscription service. You know, you can watch all of our practices, everything going on, not only here, but the rest of the season. So, you know, thanks for joining us. Thanks, you guys, for being on with us. Terrific to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good luck.